Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I see the crystal raindrops fall, and the beauty of it all is when the sun comes shining through. To make those rainbows in my mind when I think of you sometime, and I want to spend some time with you, just the two of us.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, September 22nd, 2017, and we are wrapping up another week of practice at Lambeau Field. The Green Bay Packers were on the field Wednesday and Thursday, and then tomorrow, of course, they'll have their trademark Saturday practice prior to Sunday's game against the Cincinnati Bengals. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. Thank you guys very much for listening. Back with me is fellow beat writer Tom Silverstein. Tom, good to have you back. How's week three treating you so far?
Thanks. It's going well. About as good as I could expect. Practices have been good. My, been working on my penmanship and my dangling participles, and I feel pretty good.
Are you on the injury report this week, Tom? Because just about everybody else is.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm actually, knock wood, I'm my brain is intact. I'm feeling pretty good.
So let's take a look at some of these issues for the Packers that are carrying over from the loss to Atlanta. And I think everyone is looking right now at the two tackles, you know, David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga. What have we seen or not seen from those guys this week, and where do you think that stands going into Sunday?
Yeah, well, so Bulaga took part in practice Wednesday, which was a non-padded, more jog-through than anything. Got through it, and then he was back in pads, working in pads on Thursday. Saw him do drills, but did not see him do any teamwork. So I have no idea how he looked there. And that's really going to be the key as to whether he plays or not. It's been almost 4 weeks now since he hurt his ankle, and so he should be getting close. If I were a betting man, I'd say he's going to play, but I also thought Bakhtiari was going to play last week, and he didn't. So it would be a huge, huge thing if they could get Bulaga back. Jordan McRae and Kyle Murphy did the best they could with what they have, but they need, Brian Bulaga is a first-round pick and longtime starter for a reason, and they need him back. Bakhtiari, I mean, they really need him back, too. I just don't know if they have to make sure that his hamstring doesn't blow, you know? I mean, sometimes you can feel like your hamstring's back, but it's not.
It's going to be a very down-to-the-wire decision, I think, for both these guys, just as it seemed to be last week. And I agree with you. I think Bulaga ends up playing, or at least trying to play, you know, once the game starts. But I don't know. Talking to Bakhtiari in the locker room on Wednesday, on Thursday, I just didn't get the sense that he was totally convinced that his hamstring is ready. And he actually said, you know, very similar to what you mentioned, in that, you know, a hamstring can feel ready to go at 3 weeks, but it's not. Or Spriggs said this to you, wasn't it? A hamstring can feel ready to go at 3 weeks, but it's not fully healed for 6, and you just don't know it until you screw it up again.
Right.
And that's the risk there. If one of the biggest questions that I got on Twitter the last couple of days is if Bulaga is able to play, because he seems at least a little bit more likely from what we've seen so far, is there any chance that they'd put him at left tackle and Murphy at right tackle?
I don't think so. I don't think you mess with two positions, especially when Murphy was not a disaster.
No.
On Sunday, you know, of course he was, could have been a lot better, but he was playing it on turf, in a loud stadium, with a pretty good pass rush. And all in all, he wasn't the reason they lost that game. And so I think you just stick him there. You leave him on the left side. You go with your strength, which is Bulaga on the right side. Don't mess with him on the first game back. He's going to switch to left tackle. I don't see it happening.
Now, the forgotten piece in all of this offensive tackle shuffling is Jason Spriggs, who I mentioned, you know, the second-round pick from a year ago. He's dealing with that hamstring injury from the season opener, and he gets placed on IR Thursday, which means he's done for a minimum of 8 weeks, and then they could bring him back if they want to with one of their two designated to return spots, or his season could be over. And once again, with the rule change, they don't have to declare that ahead of time. So when you look at Spriggs potentially not being available for the rest of the year, you know, depending on how they choose to use those things, mm-hmm. is that a significant loss, even though it's a guy that hadn't played this season, really, except for that one snap on special teams?
Well, it's not as big of a loss as it was before Murphy played left tackle. It looked to me like it was a big loss until Murphy played left tackle, and now I think they've got at least some insurance there. And maybe the best thing for Spriggs now is to build his body, just work on his body, get his confidence back, and if they need him after 8 weeks, you know, if there's some other injuries, then they'll bring him back. If not, I say just let that hamstring heal and let him really work in the weight room, because that's what he needs. He needs to sort of do what Bakhtiari did over the course of 2 years, which was really build up his strength. And if Spriggs can do that, then he's got a chance. I think that's part of his struggles were, you know, he's a great athlete, but he's still working into his body, and he's still not strong enough to play that position. So that might be the best thing for him. But you know, injuries will determine that. You know, they still have Barkley on IR, and I don't know what they plan to do with him either. You know, now that Justin McCray's kind of shown he's belongs in the NFL, he could just be their backup center from now on, you know, and he played right tackle. So we'll have to see how that's going to be kind of interesting, you know, how that all plays out.
Barkley was going to be the next guy that I brought up here because, you know, you never want to say that a team won't use both designated to return spots at the same position group, but I think the likelihood is pretty slim. And so then you're in a situation where you could be looking at Spriggs versus Barkley if they decide to use one on the O-line. And I know Spriggs, in theory, ensures the most important position, which is left tackle. But I wonder if with Barkley being able to play both guard spots, center, and you could probably survive with him at right tackle if you absolutely had to, mm-hmm. if they would favor veteran presence and positional versatility over left tackle.
I think they would. I think the only way they might consider otherwise would be if Bakhtiari was lost for the season and then they needed a backup for Murphy. So I agree. I think Barkley would be the logical pick to take back right now, to be the guy that would come back. But, you know, there's going to be other guys, I think, who go on IR, and that's all those decisions get made in December. That's when you're looking to bring those guys back, and so we'll know more then.
So in order to use that roster spot that was occupied by Jason Spriggs, they brought back Ricky Jean-Francois, mm-hmm. the defensive lineman who spent all of – was he here for OTAs?
Yes.
Yes, so he was here for OTAs and training camp, was on the roster for week one, played 6 snaps against Seattle, and then got released in order to make room for –
It was for Adam Pankey.
Adam Pankey, yes. A positional need based on injury. So Jean-Francois is back. The beat writers rejoice. We have another good quote in the locker room.
If you remember, I poured some of my 40-ounce out on the table here because I was mourning the loss of Ricky Jean, and I'm very happy to have him back. He didn't bring us any Dunkin' Donuts from his 25 franchises that he owns.
He could have.
Yeah, I was meant to tell him he needs to pay his employees more, but, you know, that's a whole nother subject. So, anyway, he's back, and it's a good signing. He's a good guy to have around. We know what that means. It means Mike Daniels is not playing this week. There's no freaking way he's playing this week, and I don't know how long he's going to be out. You know, they said hamstring at first, but now it's hip. It's his hip.
Was it?
There.
He's on the injury report for hip?
Yes.
So he went into the game with a hip injury.
So he
exited with a hamstring injury.
but they've changed it to hip. So I think he probably aggravated. I watched the play, you know, and he just kind of jerked his leg like something, you know, grabbed. And so I'm guessing that he just aggravated his hip injury.
So I listened to Jean-Francois' first group interview when he came back, and this doesn't really have too much news value, but I thought sort of the way his week played out was kind of amusing in that he wanted to stay around Green Bay all week because he wanted to work out and he didn't want to start traveling or moving back home to wherever he has a residence so he could stay in shape in case anybody called. And then he works out for New Orleans earlier this week on Tuesday. Yeah. Thinks they're going to sign him because they start asking him about his passport since they're going to play a game in London coming up.
2 weeks, yeah.
And then a couple days later, Wednesday,
yeah,
he decides, okay, I'll go home to Dallas and work out and do what I need to do. And he's connecting flights from Green Bay to Minneapolis. He's in the Minneapolis airport, and he gets a call saying the Packers want to bring him back. Mm-hmm. So he sits around all week, and the day he leaves, they tell him to come back.
He's funny, yeah.
They sign him, and sure enough, he's here. And he said that he had no bitterness whatsoever about being cut, A, because it's a business, and B, because his salary was fully guaranteed. So he was going to get paid regardless of what happened.
That's right.
And I thought that was just sort of an amusing little twist. It always seems to work out that way. I mean, we talked about Joe Thomas going to Dallas for a week, coming back, and then playing the most snaps of any linebacker. It's just weird how some of these things work out. But Jean-Francois is back. He seems to be a popular locker room guy.
Yes.
And I don't think there's a downside to bringing him back at all.
No, and I think they need his run-stopping ability. That's really what he's better at. And they need someone inside. You know, I looked at the game on Sunday and against Atlanta, and Quentin Dial played a ton, way more than I thought he would, and he's still learning the defense. Dean Lowry got hurt during the game, and you could see he wasn't quite himself. They kept playing him, but Kenny Clark played a lot of snaps too, and they need someone to help eat up those snaps. And I think Ricky, RJF as we like to call him, will eat those up.
I know that, you know, all of this can change in an instant depending on who stays healthy through the next couple of weeks, but what do you think are the chances that RJF is a rent-a-player until Mike Daniels comes back, and then they just, you know, let him go again? And he was asked that, and he said, if it happens, it's fine with me. I understand.
Yeah, could be. But, you know, so let's say Daniels comes back. Someone else is going to get hurt, too. I would guess that he'll stick around for a while, but, yeah, he might be a rent-a-player. Same thing happened. God, I'm trying to think who the guy was. This is killing me.
Which year,
just
roughly?
A couple of years ago. Anyway, go on. I'll think of it later as we go on. But
okay.
Yeah, that, you know, it's a guy you just use until you can get through the injury. So we'll see.
And there's some more injuries to talk about. So let's move to the back end
of
the defense.
Injuries, right? 13 guys on the injury report.
Devon House has a quad injury, and Kentrell Bryce has a groin injury. And Kentrell Bryce even went into that last game banged up, too. He had like a knee and something else that was bothering
he's
him.
He's always banged up, you know.
So what do you think about these two guys based on what we saw this week in practice?
Well, I talked to House. He's at least been around. I haven't seen Bryce, which is usually not a good sign.
Right.
Sometimes it means they're out seeing a specialist. Sometimes it means they're in the training room the whole time. A House came out and said he didn't think it was that serious, but I thought the fact he didn't practice today or Thursday in pads is pretty significant. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. But, you know, I'm just leery now. And so anytime a guy doesn't practice on Thursday, I'm starting to think he's not playing. So they very well could be without House, and that would be an issue.
So how much of a better spot do you think Dom Capers is in mentally? You know, if he went into week three knowing, okay, House is not going to play, and, you know, then I've got Randall and Rollins who have struggled. But then you toss in the fact that Kevin King showed like he can play against Julio Jones. I got to think that that's a huge relief for Capers if, in fact, House does not play.
Yeah, well, it's huge for Capers either way. He needs an outside corner who can play against real quality wide receivers. And we found out on Sunday that Demarius Randle and Quentin Rollins are not capable of that. And, I mean, it's something we've suspected, but let's face it, they had the chance to go up against the very best in a, you know, very tough situation, and they weren't up to it. Now, I thought Rollins actually played better than Randle. I thought he was a little more aggressive in the run game, but he just does not have enough speed to be on Julio Jones or Mohamed Sanu, for that matter. He doesn't have confidence in his speed. And Randall's just reckless and out of control, and I don't know what his deal is. I mean, he's a good athlete, and he can run, but he looks slow. He looks slow compared to Julio Jones.
He looks timid at times.
He looks timid. He's still biting badly on fakes. They just can't live with him covering the other team's top receivers.
So when I sort of look at this situation, I kind of think that, you know, if everybody is available in terms of, you know, their cornerback position, meaning House can play, you know, it kind of looks like a situation where it would be House, King, and then pick your poison in the slot.
Sure.
I don't know what you do there.
Sure. I think it could. You could even use Hawkins there as a possibility. You know, you could use Randle and Rollins based on situations, based on who the receiver is.
And probably how much they want to blitz, too.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And so there's possibilities there. King is going to be a starter for the rest of the season. You can just bank on that, you know. He's their top pick, and he's going to be playing this year.
So with as many snaps as Bryce had been playing, how do you think things shake out in the back part of the secondary now? Because it doesn't look like he's going to be around this weekend.
Yeah, and he didn't play very well in the first week.
No, he did not.
He
played okay
really
against Seattle, didn't he?
I'm sorry, first week, second week.
Yeah, against Atlanta he was bad.
Yeah, he didn't get tested like he did in this game. And the thing that really just shocked me was that goal line play when Justin Hardy just blew him off the line of scrimmage. I'm like, this is Kentrell Bryce, who's 212 pounds.
With a block you're talking
about.
Yeah,
with a block. Yeah, right at the line. This guy's a 192-pound wide receiver, and he just jacked him right at the line. It was a goal line play, and they scored. Freeman scored a touchdown on it. So I think automatically Josh Jones is playing. Capers saw everything that we saw, and I believe Josh Jones will be playing quite a bit on Sunday. What role it's going to be, I'm not sure yet. That we'll find out. They need to try to get him into the nitro where Burnett was, but they, you know, you risk not having Burnett up near the line of scrimmage. And so there's a lot of finagling they're going to have to do there. But I assure you Josh Jones will be on the field Sunday.
No, I agree. I think that he showed some explosiveness, some athleticism in ways that the Packers don't really have from any other guys. And one of the things that I wonder if it was particularly beneficial for Capers and, you know, Darren Perry and these guys evaluating them was that because of the way the score was and because Atlanta tried to run out the clock so much,
mm-hmm.
even though Jones wasn't quote-unquote in the box by design, he played a ton in the box because they knew they were going to run. And so you got to see a little bit of what he would be like in those run support situations or what his instincts would be like slicing into the backfield. And so that probably was a little bit, at least in my head, maybe more valuable than a game where, you know, he's just in coverage and they're airing it out left and right, because that athleticism in the box is going to be valuable.
His strength, 220 pounds, and you know, I'm going to be writing about that for Sunday. About
don't tell everyone,
him.
Tom.
Well, you know, they got to. I want to, you know, whet their appetite a little bit.
Okay.
But he's a guy that they need to have near the line of scrimmage. You just can't play that position with anybody. Now, Burnett's done a good job, and Burnett really knows what he's doing out there. He's not going to get caught giving up too many. Gap control, you know, losing gap control, but Jones is an explosive player, and he plays downhill, and he's going to try to blow someone up as much as he can. And you got to have that near the line of scrimmage if you're going to be play with an inside linebacker and a safety.
It's amazing to me, and again, I've only been here a few years, but just the shift in depth from away from the cornerback position directly to the safety position. You know, when I first got here, they had Sam Shields, Casey Hayward, Demarius Randall, mm-hmm. Quentin Rollins. I think, was that the first year Gunter made the team too, mm-hmm. but didn't play much? Mm-hmm. And you look at the depth that they thought they had there. And then last year it started to get exposed a little bit, and we saw Burnett at inside linebacker and Bryce on the field, so they were playing three safeties. And now all of a sudden you wonder, where would they be without Bryce, without the luxury of having Marwin Evans buried on the depth chart, without Josh Jones? It's just sort of interesting how from in only a two-plus-year span, the strength can totally shift from one part of the secondary to another.
Yeah, well, they went a lot of years with the safety position being awful. I mean, really awful. And they had to spend some capital and, you know, use a first-round pick on Clinton Dix, now a second-round pick on Josh Jones. And they got lucky on Bryson Evans. I mean, it's good scouting, but those guys should be your backups. And then they complement Burnett.
And Burnett took some time to develop, too, right?
It took a lot of time to develop. And, you know, he didn't have the luxury, really, of a lot of tutelage because Nick Collins went out in 2011. And from that point on, he was sort of the lead dog. And they've been bad at safety. So
when you look at the back end of this Packers defense now and what we think we might see this weekend, how does that match up with what look to be some decent weapons for Cincinnati at some spots, pending, of course, the health of Tyler Eifert, their great tight end?
Yeah, that's a huge it doesn't sound like he's going to play. We'll find out. But he's a legitimate threat. He's sort of, to me, what Kyle Rudolph is for the Vikings.
Yes.
And if they don't have him, well, that takes a lot out of what they have. I mean, they've got A.J. Green, but if I'm Dom Capers, I just bracket and take after seeing what Julio Jones did, just take A.J. Green out of the game.
So sort of mimic what they did in Week 8 in Atlanta last year, where Dom said he was doubled on all but, what, three snaps?
Yeah, exactly. And don't let him beat you and force Dalton to go somewhere else.
So I'm going to ask you essentially the same question that I asked you last week, which is if they decide to bracket him, we know Clinton Dix is going to be one of those two guys. With the way Kevin King played, do you give him the assignment and say follow him everywhere, or do you try and play it straight again and go side to side?
I think, yeah, or if House is available, I put House on him.
Okay.
And let King stay. Let King work on the other guy. So you're giving House the toughest assignment, but you're giving him all the help.
Right.
And then you got King playing the other side, and you feel pretty good about him, and he's not always getting all the help. You know, and you got to throw some zone in there, too. You know, they played almost all man-to-man against
yes.
The Falcons. And, you know, as I wrote on Wednesday, I don't blame Capers. He had to find out whether his guys could stand up to that. You know, it was almost like a laboratory. He said, all right, I've been playing man, press man all camp. I believe in these guys. Now I'm going to find out who stands up to this. You know, it's a great test. And we found out who stood up to it. King stood up to it. House was okay. You know, he did okay in coverage. That's what we found out. And we found out that Randall and Rollins couldn't stand up to it.
And then if you move to another part of that offense for the Bengals, you look at that offensive line, and you were telling me before we pressed record about, you know, first of all, they've tried to build that a little bit, but they've also lost some pieces. And that reminded me, you know, going up against that line, we didn't even mention Nick Perry having surgery.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, that was breaking news yesterday.
Yeah. So Mike McCarthy said that Nick Perry is scheduled for surgery. By the time you listen to this, he could have already had it. We don't know when it was scheduled for. On the hand injury that popped up, Capers said on the first drive of the game against Atlanta, he broke his hand.
Finger, I guess.
Yeah, finger. Yeah. So he's having surgery. I think the chances of him playing this weekend are down in the teens or even lower, maybe.
I think he's out this week. There's no way right after surgery that they put him back on the field.
So how does that influence the Packers' pass rush? And then after we talk about that, we can go into their offensive line a little bit for Cincinnati.
Okay. Number one, you know, Perry played great in week one and then not so great last week. And maybe the finger had something to do with it. It was also the fact that he's going up against Jake Matthews, who's a lot better left tackle than Seattle's left tackle. So I think what they're lucky is that and probably it was smart that they brought in Ahmad Brooks, because now they can just plug him in instead of having Kyler Fackrell be their outside linebacker. And so I think Brooks moves into the starting lineup right away. And he'll probably split time with Fackrell, but now all of a sudden you're not so bad. You know, maybe Matthews moves over to Perry's spot, and Brooks, who played on the left side his entire time in San Francisco, probably plays on the left as well.
So how much do you think they want to play Fackrell? That's one thing I wondered too, because it almost struck me that I know that Perry is probably at this point in his career, you know, a decent step above Brooks in terms of what he's got left in the tank.
Oh, yeah. Perry?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a lot more left.
But I still think that Brooks is a good step above Fackrell. And so is this going to be similar to Seattle, I wondered, where essentially Matthews and Perry played just about every snap?
I don't think you can do that with Brooks. He's 33 years old.
Yep.
I think you got to keep working Fackrell, and I don't think Fackrell has been terrible.
I don't think he's
been as bad as he was in training camp.
Which was the same deal last year.
Yeah, he's sort of a game guy. You know, he plays better in games than he does in practice. He's by no means an impact player, but I think you can get enough snaps out of him and rotate him with Brooks, and you can even use Chris Odom a little bit if you want to try to play in that elephant position. So I am interested to see what Brooks does. I mean, you know, he was cut, you know, for a reason. But I also think he has something left, and I want to see how much that is.
You and I were discussing Chris Odom earlier today, and you made a really good point that I hadn't really thought about, which is, you know, this is a guy that played one special team snap against Seattle and was active against Atlanta, but didn't play at all on special teams or at all from scrimmage. And so I thought, okay, maybe this is a guy that they cut for Jean Francois. And then you said, well, ordinarily that would make sense, but don't forget, this is a guy that they tracked for a long time in the pre-draft process, a guy that they brought here to Lambeau Field for one of those pre-draft visits. So, you know, I don't know if this is the right way to phrase it, but, you know, how much of a rope do you think they have for this guy in terms of developing a little bit? Don't forget, he's an undrafted rookie.
Yeah. I think they like him, and I think they want to find out more information on him. I will say that probably the most fortunate guy on this entire roster is Lindsey Pipkins, who continues to – he's like winning Survivor. You know, he just, week after week, they make moves, and Lindsey, he's not active, but damn, they must like him a lot. I mean, they don't talk about him much at all.
No.
We don't ask about him all that much. He is a stud of a athlete. You can just see that. But, man, he just keeps surviving week after week. I don't know if he has pictures on someone or what.
Well, the next thing we need to do is whenever the beat writers pool our money for the Powerball, we need to take him with us because he clearly knows how to win these things.
Honest to God, I'm like, I want whatever, you know, when it comes to layoffs and stuff at work, I want what Lindsey Pipkins has. I want whatever chain he's wearing around his neck.
Is it LaTroy's chain?
No, because we all know what happened to LaTroy. So
true.
I think Lindsey's got a rabbit's foot or something in his pocket. But hey, more power to him. There's something they really like about him.
So we strayed away briefly from the scouting report. We just talked about the Packers pass rush, and I know that you wanted to discuss Cincinnati's O-line a little bit. Mm-hmm. So just what's the down and dirty on these guys?
Well, You know, they have sort of made their transition. You know, they got rid of, or they moved on from Andrew Wentworth. They didn't re-sign Zeitler, the guy from Wisconsin who became the highest, one of the highest paid guards in the NFL. They've invested, you know, a first-round pick in Oboehe, their left tackle, I think a second-round pick in Jake Fisher.
Fisher, yep, second-round pick.
Their center is like a fourth-round pick, and Trey Hopkins is a fourth-round pick, I think, although I'm not sure he's going to play. He's on the injury report, and I think he missed the Houston game. So they're kind of rebuilt, but – you know, without Mike Daniels, it's kind of hard to say who they're going to really try to go after and take advantage of. I don't know. They don't really have – Kenny Clark's been okay. I mean, no, he's been very solid. Dean Lowry's been just okay. I haven't really seen a lot from Dean Lowry.
The problem is
– Quentin Dowell's been okay against the run.
The problem is I think all three of those guys play the run much better than they do pass rush-wise. And so, you know, Kenny Clark's played solid, as you said. I think he's actually played pretty well, but he doesn't – they don't have anybody on the interior that gives you pass rush without Daniels.
Not really. No, they really don't. And Lowry is supposed to. Now, he did – what did he pull his thigh or
– He dropped out of the game briefly and then came back in. I don't know if they even ever announced an injury for him.
Yeah, and so something was not quite right with him, I think. Because he didn't play that many snaps. Dial played a ton of snaps.
Correct.
And so, yeah, they need to continue to develop that and keep finding someone. So I don't know if Andy Dalton's going to be under great, tremendous pressure, but really you just want to keep your guys covered up and force him to throw into coverage. That's really what you want with Dalton.
You know, it's the type of situation, I think, where this would be a game that maybe Capers blitzes a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, there's not the depth of weapons that Atlanta has.
Right.
And if they don't have Perry and they don't have Daniels, you got to generate something somewhere. And so that's why, you know, I mentioned the possibility of corner blitzes, which is something they showed a ton of in camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, I don't know how you feel. I think Randall's a better blitzer than Rollins.
Yeah. I think he's faster.
Right.
I like Rollins playing the run out of the slot better than I do Randall. But Randall's faster. I don't know. It's a little bit
six of one, half a dozen of another.
Exactly.
So I think there could be some more pressure. You know, I don't know what that means for the inside linebacker position. Don't forget, Jake Ryan has the concussion. So we were talking about Blake Martinez and Joe Thomas there.
Mm-hmm.
But what are the ways you think they try and generate pressure against this Cincinnati line?
Well, so let's say Josh Jones plays a little bit, which we anticipate. He'd be really good coming off the edge.
No question.
Right next to – you put him next to Matthews and force them to block both those guys. You know, he can – let's say he's playing nitro. He can easily slip down onto the one of the two sides and rush next to Brooks or rush next to Matthews. You can always bring Burnett, you know, screaming down from safety position. There's all kinds of ways to bring guys. The one thing Capers doesn't do much anymore is zone blitz. You know, he doesn't drop guys out of there all that much. He's really been pretty straight with his man-to-man scheme. And so, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll try to do a few things to confuse Dalton.
Now, one thing that we forgot to mention when talking about the Packers O-line was the pass rush for the Bengals. And, you know, they've got some decent players on that side of the ball. Everything starts up front with Geno Atkins. What type of problems does he present right through the middle of any offensive line?
Well, he's Mike Daniels times five, I think. You know, he's impossible to block one-on-one. You can't block him one-on-one. And then you can try to double-team him, and he'll beat that too. So he's a guy that they have to be aware of all the time. They got a scheme around him. I don't think they're as dangerous, you know, as they were when Michael Johnson was in his prime. I mean, I remember a game that he just destroyed the Packers. I can't remember if it was Belaga, but it was in Cincinnati, and he was just too much to handle. So I don't know that he's playing to that degree. They have a couple of rookies, pass rushers they drafted, Lawson and Willis, I think it is. So they'll bring some heat, and I think that really they're going to have to find a way to slow Atkins down, and then, you know, just make sure the rest of those guys don't hurt him.
What do you think about the Packers' ability to run on this defense?
I'm not too sure about their ability to run, period. We haven't really seen it, seen a lot of it. I wonder if, you know, they need to just find a little bit different ways to get Montgomery involved, and whether it's, I don't know, whether if it's more power plays, you know, outside zones, get him out to the edge or something, but it's just been inconsistent, and probably because they don't do it enough, you know. And I still want to see Aaron Jones play a little bit more. I just want to see him play with the number one line and see what they could get out of him. But it's not going to happen. They're going to go with Jamal Williams.
And that's a good place, I think, to bring up what running backs coach Ben Sermons talked about Thursday night, which was that, yes, Montgomery has played a ton of snaps, 88%. He's leading the NFL by 16 snaps. He's on pace to play more snaps than any running back in the last 5 years in the entire NFL. And he said it's probably a little bit more than I would have liked him to play. But generally in the opener, you ride your starters. Mm-hmm. And then in Atlanta, I couldn't quite understand what he gave for an explanation there. Was it the tempo that he was talking about, that they just couldn't sub that much?
No, because, you know, they huddled all the time. I think what it was they just – they liked their matchups. They used him quite a bit at receiver. You know, they went to some empty backfields. I think they felt more comfortable with him blocking and being able to also swing the ball out. You know, they ran a couple screens with him. I think at some point it's like a security blanket. You're like, I just want this guy in there.
Right.
You know, and you know, we'll just – now's not a good time to experiment with Jamal Williams.
But at some point – Sermon said they have to scale back his reps a little bit,
yes,
because you don't want this guy. I mean, if he were to play this much, he would either not be able to walk by November because mm-hmm. of injury, or he'd burn out by the second quarter of every game from fatigue.
Yeah, well, you know, he is as good an athlete as they've got on the team.
No question.
I mean, he is built like a brick, you know what. And
like a young Tom Silverstein.
Yeah, like in my much younger days. He's really a powerful athlete, but you know, you don't want to mess with fire and just overwork him. That's a mistake. So you'll see Jamal Williams, I think, probably alternate some series where he gets an entire series, is my guess.
Now, I know that they're probably going to keep three running backs active based mm-hmm. on what they've done so far, but when it comes to playing from scrimmage, barring injury for Montgomery or Williams, is it essentially a redshirt year, do you think, for these guys? In other words, if Montgomery and Williams stay healthy, is there any reason for them to play Mays or Jones, whichever one is up?
A lot of it will depend on practice. I mean, really, the guys can make some gains in practice. You know, if they start playing pretty well in practice, all of a sudden – the coaches take notice. I remember when Dwan Harris was here, and basically he was playing like scout team. You'd see him playing scout team cornerback, and then he was doing some scout team running back, and they kept noticing him. He's on the practice squad, and they were finally like, oh, we got to find a way to get this guy on the team, and they did, and he became their starter for a while. So I think that's kind of what we'll have to see, how that plays out in practice. But they're gonna run with Jamal Williams now because he is reliable. He is a pass. He can pass block. He's probably even better than Montgomery. And right now that's important to them.
Definitely. I think that you saw for sure in training camp that with the amount of times they did the one-on-one blitz pickup, which was more than maybe even in the two camps I covered prior to that, mm-hmm. I don't remember seeing it that much. They were going to find out early and often which of these guys could do it, and I don't think there's any question that among the tailbacks, Williams, you know, stepped to the front of that class.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on the Bengals before we wrap this one up?
You know, their rookie John Ross, who played with Kenny with Kevin King in Washington, and runs like a 4.22. Is that what he ran at the combine?
Same thing I ran.
Exactly.
4.22.
Yeah. 4:22.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to play, or at least he's listed as with a knee injury. Another guy the Packers looked at, Joe Mixon, the running back.
Brought him in here for a visit.
They did. And, I don't really understand Cincinnati's backfield. I mean, they've got Giovanni Bernard, who I've always liked. I thought he was a decent
carried my fantasy team 1 year.
Did he?
1 year he just carried me into the playoffs.
And Jeremy Hill was, a pretty productive back for them before. And, and now they've got Mixon. So I don't know exactly how that's going to go. But I do know that Cincinnati's going to run the ball. And their Packers, if they're playing Nitro, they better be up for it.
Buckle up.
Yep, exactly.
I'm trying to think of anything else I wanted to touch on here. One quick thing I wanted to mention with their corners for the Bengals. Their top two guys, Dre Kirkpatrick from Alabama and Adam Pac-Man Jones, the longtime vet originally from West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
We heard all through camp about Randall and Rollins and House and how they want to play this press man, aggressive. We've talked about it on this podcast, umpteen times. And I watched a little bit of the Bengals' most recent game against Houston, and you talk about playing press man coverage, and I mean Kirkpatrick and Jones were as close as Tom and I are next to each other now. I mean, they were a yard across the line of scrimmage, looking straight into their face mask, getting hands on right away. There was none of this 4 and 5 and 6 yard cushion. None of this, we're going to start 10 yards back and then rush up late or anything like Demarius Randall's done at times. And so to me, it was just, I don't want to say that it's the Packers doing it wrong, because we don't know exactly what they're being taught by Joe Witt or what the whole disguise is for any particular play. But if you're talking about wanting to be in guys' faces, I hadn't seen two corners do it consistently the way that Kirkpatrick and Jones did. And that doesn't mean it's effective. I mean, they still give up completions and stuff.
Yeah, but
from a mentality
standpoint,
I mean, if you're looking the guy right in the eyes every single play from 2 yards across from him, that basically says I'm not scared and I'm going to put my hands on you.
Yeah, and they got, they have a third corner, Darquez Dennard, who's a first round or early second.
Yeah.
So they've got some ability to play coverage, and I think that will be interesting because they will get up in the faces of guys, and Jones is, he's feisty.
Yes, he is.
He's
a hell of a punt returner too
when they use him. Yeah, he can catch like 8 balls together. Have you ever seen that? Did you ever see that video? He stands there, and they keep punting balls to him, and he caught like 8 of them and kept possession of all of them. It's amazing. Look it up on YouTube
sometime. I'll have to check it out.
It's really cool. He's a pretty amazing guy. The other last thing about Cincinnati is don't forget they changed their offensive coordinator.
Yes.
And I expect them to show some things they hadn't shown before, so that'll be I'm sure the Packers will come out and later after the game and say, boy, we didn't see that coming.
And last but not least,
live blog. We had a great, great live blog, except for the people who are kicking their animals at home. I'm telling you, stop that. I'm going to call the ASPCA because you have to stop judging the season by one game. Trust me, I've been in this position for 28 years. You don't judge one season on one game. So, I'm pretty sure that we'll calm down this week, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So the live blog, Sunday afternoon, and until then, check out all of our coverage on jsonline.com and packersnews.com. So we hope you guys have a great start to your weekends, and we'll talk to you first thing Monday morning.
Absolutely.
See ya.
For all we know, just the two of us. We can make it if we try, just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. Building them castles in the sky, just the two of us. You and I.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.